and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing. It's actually Sunday in the Eastern time zone. We always do Eastern time zone on this podcast, but we're in the Western time zone, so it's still Saturday night. Joining me from here in Las Vegas, we've just watched the Lakers win the first ever in-season tournament over the Indiana Pacers. I think they won by about 20. I don't remember the exact final score. It's Tim Bontemps.
Hello, Brian. What's more important than the first in-season tournament? First Hoop Collective live show. Big success. Thanks to everybody who came to see it.
Great success, as Borat would say. Joining me from elsewhere here in Las Vegas, also at the game tonight, was Van McMahon.
Joining you from the penthouse, one floor above you, Wendy, and howdy, partners. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to apologize to the Pacers. They actually only lost by 14.
Point differential does not matter in the final, just on the way to get here.
It doesn't even count. It's lost to history. We'll never even find the box score again. It was very clear that was a one-off situation. Yes, we did have our first ever live show last night, Friday night, and it was a good success. We are very appreciative of all the listeners who came out. Appreciative of our guests who, it was a bit of a challenge to get people to, want to come see us on Friday night in Las Vegas at 7 p.m. U2 was playing. There was a bunch
Cooper
of country
Flag
bands
was
playing. Cooper Flag was playing. That's right. Cooper Flag was playing.
We had a lot of competition, but we got a lot of guests, though. It was very fun.
Yeah. So, it was... they absolutely love McMahon, and
who doesn't?
I think they tolerated Bontemps. just kidding, Timmy. We
like
all
the rest, like the rest of my life.
Listen, a lot of people walked away very happy with those signed Wendy's Topps cards.
And poor McMahon was thinking he was going to be putting away some college tuition money, and then it all got swiped away from him.
No, I got one. Yes. That ought to cover at least a semester.
We had a meet and greet afterwards, and we gave all the ones we brought away during that meet and greet. So that was good. At one point, one of the guys was like, hey, can you sign it? And I was like, yeah, it's already signed. It was very enjoyable. Thank you to everybody who put it on. It took a pretty big effort at ESPN to get everything put on, to do it sort of offsite at this place, security and all this kind of stuff. So thank you to everybody.
And thanks to Dave, Malika, and KP for coming aboard and having a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And Jackson, who's already back in Connecticut, ESPN wouldn't even let him stay to enjoy the in-season tournament final, wouldn't let him have a Saturday night in Vegas. They were like, get out, get back on the next plane. So thanks to Jackson, especially as well. Okay. So we did see, I thought the final score doesn't indicate the level of the game that was played. The Pacers played from behind for most of the game. The Lakers really game plan this game. There were some people comparing it to a playoff game. I don't think I would go that far. I saw some people say this is like a game seven. And I was like, whoa, Tigers, let's just calm down. How do you tell me you've never been to a game seven without telling me you've been game seven, saying that was like a game seven. But one thing I will say is I do think there was a higher level of preparation for this game and a much more, in comparison to your average December game, a much more intense level of game plan that was in, particularly from the Lakers, who double teamed Tyrese Haliburton very aggressively. They double teamed him, according to our guy Stats Williams with the ESPN Stats and Info Tracking. They double teamed him 26 times and in the game. Pretty much every time he got a screen, they trapped him. Sometimes even if he didn't get a screen. And they really tried to put their length. In fact, one of the things that I kind of took away from this game, seeing the Lakers play live, was just how hellacious they can be when they trap, because they have Cam Reddish out there who has great size. They have Jared Vanderbilt back who has great size. If they have hit those guys as the point of attack defender, and then you have AD, and they also had Jackson Hayes played in this game. He doesn't play every game. They played in this game. So if you bring the screener up to set a screen for Haliburton, which a lot of times it's Miles Turner, you have Anthony Davis, Jared Vanderbilt, or Cam Reddish as your ability to trap. And Tyrese just had a problem with the length. He had trouble throwing over it. He had trouble getting around it. Next time that happens, I think he'll be more ready. The Pacers will be more ready. It was interesting that they watched the Bucks basically not trap Haliburton at all as he was torching them. And it's harder to track if you're the Bucks because Brooke Lopez is not as mobile as Anthony Davis is. But the Bucks really didn't change up much of the looks on Haliburton. They were switching or dropping, and Haliburton ate him alive. The Lakers completely had a different game plan. So it was a bit different in that regard. I don't know how you felt about it, Bontemps, but I felt it was something more than a regular season game, but not really to the level of a playoff game. And the Lakers celebrated by throwing water around in the post-game celebration area. No champagne corks, at least in the arena, were popped. But I don't know how you felt about
LeBron had a little champagne. They had a celebration room, not the locker room, but they had a room for them to go in and celebrate. He basically said, hey, young guys don't know how to do this. But no, it wasn't like a full-blown championship celebration.
Okay, I thought it was water. I take it all back. I was down there and I thought it was water. So I'm so sorry. But all right, sorry, Bontemps. I don't know what you thought about the way that game played out.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I thought Tyrese Haliburton played well. I mean, he had 20 and 11 on 8-for-14 shooting. He had two turnovers in the first 2 minutes where he tried to throw a lob to Obi Toppin that LeBron knocked away, and he tried to thread a pass inside that got tipped away. He had one turnover the final 46 minutes of the game and played pretty well. I think this game
It took away his ability to get downhill and his ability to play with aggression.
I actually don't agree with that. To me, he set up a lot of open threes in this game. And the story of this game was, to me, yes, the Lakers' defense was great. I'm not trying to say he didn't obviously
the Pacers were the highest scoring team in NBA history, and they had 109 points. I think the Lakers
because they went 10-for-41 from three and missed a ton of wide open shots. Buddy Hield was 2-for-9 from three.
They went like 7-of-33 from three in the semifinal. And they scored like 130 something, 120 something.
Yes, they got out and ran. And like, again, the difference is the Lakers have a really good defensive team and the Bucks don't. Like, a lot of the things that the Lakers were doing, like, the Bucks couldn't really trap because they don't have the players, they don't have the athletes to do it, even if they want to. Like, if Malik Beasley and Damian Lillard trap Tyrese Haliburton, it doesn't matter. He can just look over them and make a play. And he, as he said after the game, they have all these 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", wings that they can throw at me. Most teams aren't built like that, which is true. But he still had 20 and 11 and one turnover the final 46 minutes of the game. And he was 6-for-8. Actually, he was 6-for-6 on 2-point shots. I mean, he missed.
I don't think
a bunch
he played
threes.
Poorly. I think they limited his what he did.
What I would say is the Lakers did what they were going to do, right? They destroyed them. The story of the game was the Lakers destroying them in the paint offensively, having a 40-point advantage on points in the paint. And yes, the Pacers were able to outscore them from three because the Lakers barely shot any. Mm-hmm. But if the Pacers were going to win the game, they had to shoot well from three. They couldn't have a bad shooting game from three. And they were horrendous from three and missed a ton of wide open shots. And so because of that, in a game where it was really going to be strength versus strength, and it was going to be the Pacers trying to play fast and setting up open threes, and the Lakers giving the ball to Anthony Davis in what was a perfect setup for him with a team that had nobody that could physically withstand him, and so he obliterated them inside. What ultimately won out was the Lakers' strength beat the Pacers' strength. And that was what really the difference in the game was.
But they did limit Haliburton. And yeah, he was 6-of-6 on twos, but for him to only have 14 field goal attempts is limiting Haliburton. And I thought, you're absolutely right, and Haliburton said this himself, like, they had good looks at threes that they didn't make. And if they have a good shooting night, it can be a totally different game. But the Bucks are a terrible transition defense team. And if you're a bad transition defense team, Haliburton is going to roast you. Like, you are in real trouble. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, the Pacers weren't able to get out and run on the Lakers. Now, part of that is because the Lakers kept on driving right down the middle of the paint, scoring, and they're taking the ball out of the net. But yeah, you're right about this. Certainly, the two biggest factors in this game were the Lakers. I believe they finished with 86 points in the paint. That's an impressive number.
Yes, it's the highest in the NBA this season. They had 43 baskets in the paint. 34 of those were from LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Austin Reed.
Yeah.
They had those three guys had 35 baskets overall, and 34 of them were in the paint.
Yeah, every single with one all due by respect, LeBron, every single one by AD.
Yeah. With all due respect to the Pacers, they've had a great run. We've talked a lot about them. They've great showing and everything. But they're a little bit an unserious team if you can give up 86 points in the paint.
Listen, they're a really fun team, but there's no way. And you know, Tyrese had this thing today where he's like, people think they're geniuses by saying we got to get better defense. I don't think people think they're geniuses saying that, but it's just like a captain obvious statement. You can't be that bad defensively and be taken seriously as a contender when it comes to winning best of seven series. Now, maybe they can get better defensively. We'll see what they do before the trade deadline. Certainly offensively, despite the fact tonight wasn't a great night, they are historically elite. He is a phenomenal, he's a 6'5" Steve Nash type of player, to borrow from a Rick Carlisle comparison. But really, what this game came down to is Anthony Davis absolutely dominated. He was awesome. Miles Turner had a really bad night. Anthony Davis, 41 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists. By the way, the last Laker to have a 40-20, 5 assist performance. Any guesses? A little impromptu trivia.
Was it Anthony Davis?
Nope. Shaq?
Nope.
I saw Anthony Davis has 5 40-20 games in his career. Yeah. I'm not sure I would have gotten that.
Free Kareem.
Wilt Chamberlain.
All the way back. But it's crazy. You talk about the centers the Lakers have had 40 points, yep. 20 rebounds, 5 assists, and this doesn't count as a regular season game. But
I learned Friday night, by the way, in the Bontemps trivia that Bob McAdoo was a center. I did not know he was a center.
Yeah, I thought that was cheating. He certainly wasn't by the time we got to the Showtime Lakers. Anyways, plus he blocked 4 shots. And then Miles Turner fouled out. I played only 25 minutes. And when we talk about guys who are missing open shots, he went 1 of 5 from 3, 3 of 11 from the floor. If Anthony Davis plays like this, the Lakers are absolutely a threat to win trophies, and they won one tonight.
Yeah, but that's the thing. This was the perfect team for him to play. This is why he had a great game. The Pacers, this was probably the worst possible opponent the Pacers could have had, right? Because what the Pacers do on defense, because they're not very good on defense, is they try to limit the opposition from shooting threes. And then they've got Miles Turner at the rim to try to block shots and get in the way, right? That's more or less what their defense is. Now, the last couple games, they played pretty decent defense against the Bucks and the Celtics, two teams that shoot a lot of threes. The Lakers don't shoot threes. They don't have anybody that's a good shooter. And most of the time, they're not really trying to shoot threes. And so they just took Anthony Davis and ran him like a battering ram at the rim. And the Pacers had no way to try to stop him. And LeBron, same thing. Whenever he tried to get to the rim, he got there whenever he wanted. And they just physically dominated the game inside. That's what, to me, it's not the Lakers were the better team coming into the game. It's not a surprise that they won. But the way this played out, that was where I said, Haliburton didn't have quite the game he normally does. He also played pretty well. It really just came down to they got a ton of looks from three. They didn't make hardly any of them. And the Lakers leaned into what they do and totally dominated the game. Now, will we see Anthony Davis do this when he's playing against Nikola Jokic or other players like that? We will see. But in this setting, against a team with no interior size at all, he was able to run roughshod. And to his credit, he did from start to finish. And the one thing that was particularly impressive was, as you pointed out earlier, yes, they were taking the ball out of the basket, Indiana, most of the time. But the Lakers' defense in transition was great. And they didn't let – there was a couple times the Pacers got out for easy buckets because they're going to do that against every team. But for the most part, they got back and got in the way and made it difficult as much as they could throughout the game. And that was really impressive. Their connectivity on defense was really good. And look, the Lakers have been the best team in this tournament the whole way through. They won by an average of 20 points. They curb-stomped New Orleans on Thursday. Obviously, they won going away today. And yeah, you could say that some of the teams they didn't play, they played were that great. But they still beat Phoenix twice. They beat this Indiana team that had beaten everybody along the way. They more than deserved winning this thing.
Listen, if you're winning by 20, if you're winning by 20 points, saying that your competition wasn't that tough doesn't really hold water.
I mean, you're taking care of business. Yeah.
And they humiliated the Pelicans. A 44-point.
Yeah.
They hand them 44-point loss. And, you know, Zion has been just torched for that, deservedly so. But that was also the Lakers just absolutely dominating. But, you know, tonight, I mean, that core.
And it was a three-point game. It was a three-point game with 6 minutes to go tonight, too. And it, oh, here and we Cam go. Reddish hits it. No.
We got to hype up Cam Reddish.
Cam Reddish hit a shot. But then it was Anthony Davis, 10 straight points, and just took the game over, and they had no answer inside the final 6 minutes of the game. As you said, five miles Turner out. That was that.
LeBron did want – I mean, he made a point to, like, give – Cam Reddish's props. Cam Reddish was a big part of their defensive effort. And then that three, LeBron called it the biggest shot of the game. That's right, because the Pacers had gone on a little run to cut it to one possession. He hits that, the Lakers slammed the door. That was one of two threes that the Lakers hit in the entire game. The Lakers did. Yeah. They did not hit a three-pointer until just more than a minute was left in the third quarter. That's insane. In the modern day NBA, and they still scored 123 points. And it's because, you know, you got that court and you got the blue on the outside and that red strip running down the middle. And I'm telling you, the Pacers defense, it was the parting of the Red Sea all game long. LeBron, AD, Austin Reeves, just whenever they wanted to get in the lane and get a layup or a dunk, it was happening.
Yeah, Bontemps, you were in our Slack channel tonight asking our stats and information people about the last time there was a game that there was no three-pointers hit. And you can
there were three halves this season a team hasn't hit a three, including tonight. The last time a team didn't make a three and won the game was Miami Heat missed nine threes in 2016 and beat the Charlotte Hornets. But yeah, look, like the lack of shooting is something to be concerned about with the Lakers overall in terms of them being a championship level team, because you're probably not going to win a lot of playoff games or a lot of high level games if you're getting outscored to this degree at the 3-point line. But if they get this kind of performance from Anthony Davis in the playoffs on a consistent basis, you know, they'll certainly be happy with that. More than anything, though, we haven't talked about this really enough. It is ridiculous the level that LeBron James is playing at and the speed and force that he is still playing with at, you know, or 3 weeks before his 39th birthday. It is unbelievable to watch this guy look like a freight train flying down the court, getting layups, going around guys in transition and finishing. Like he is still, you know, Rick Carlisle, you know, said going into this game that LeBron is still in his prime. He's obviously not still in his prime. We all saw him in his prime, but he's still an all NBA player. He's still one of the best 15 players on the planet. And he is, I mean, he was the easy pick for me for MVP of this tournament. And just continues to be one of the best players on the planet in his 21st season in the league, which is just absolutely unbelievable to watch.
I mean, what are the real differences between LeBron now and prime LeBron? The one major difference is durability. But other than that,
his defense
is so much worse. Right.
Okay, I'll accept defense, although he when he decides to crank it up, he's still pretty good. But right. He's not the all-world defender he used to be.
Yeah.
But like athleticism, I watched a guy drive down the lane, take off from the dotted line. There's a defender trying to contest, and he kind of double pumps and throws a thing down at a key moment in the game. He is still, you know, last year when he was making his OG whiz, I might retire speech, he said he's still better than 95% of the players in the league. I thought that was pretty significantly underselling himself, honestly. He's still a top 1% player in the league. I don't think that's up for a whole lot of debate.
Yeah, and I will say one of the takeaways, and I know this is elementary and, you know, I can be mocked for this, but when it comes to winning stuff in the NBA, it helps to have the superstar players.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you got to have guys who can deliver at this level. And LeBron and AD hit the gas and they were just better. And, you know, in a one-game setting, it's different from a seven-game setting. You know, the Pacers could have hit 18 threes tonight. And then we'd have a completely different situation. But you know, you really got to have superstars to win. We can debate the word superstar, but you know, it's really nice to have Jokic and Jamal Murray.
Right.
You know, when it comes down to it, you know, the Heat didn't have that 1-2 punch, with all due respect to what they had. They didn't have it. And the Pacers didn't have LeBron and AD tonight. And so if you're looking at trying to figure out how this will end, like, as long as you have the capability of LeBron and AD and a team that defends, I think the Lakers were seventh in the league in defense. They had, at one point, I think when they were really struggling and below 500, they were down like around 17 or 18. Well, they're all up to seventh and probably will go up a little bit tonight. When you defend like that and you have superstars that have the ability to play like that, everything is within your grasp. You know, you might as well get that lesson early in the in-season tournament. That lesson has been learned over the decades in the finals. So you might as well get it less learned in the first in-season tournament final, because, you know, that's probably going to be the case when you play with the chips in the game.
Look, and this game is why everybody is always all over the place on Anthony Davis, right? And it's why he's such a popular topic on the debate shows, because when Anthony Davis plays like this, he looks like he's in the same class as Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid and the other, like, super-duper elite superstar bigs in the league. Problem is, he does this every once in a while, and then there's long stretches where he'll have a good 15 minutes and then be invisible for a while. And, or he'll, you know, like today, even there were points in the game where I wasn't sure if he was going to keep playing because he got banged up a little bit. But, you know, these are the kind of performances where you see him and you're like, all right, like, how consistently will this be happening down the road in the playoffs when the Lakers need it? But certainly this is the formula. Like you said, Brian, LeBron is healthy. AD is healthy. These guys have all these big athletic wings, and if they could get some shooting, they could add some shooting during the year. You know, that's the formula for them being a real contending threat in the West.
Okay. Well, we'll see how this weird pivot now to like regular season games starts in a couple of days. But it was a very positive in-season tournament. We'll see what the rating is. I'm sure the rating collapsed in the last few minutes when the game was in hand, but a Saturday night game that was close, you know, it was
it was close till the final couple minutes of the game.
Right. Sure, with the Lakers playing in it and LeBron and AD playing at a high level. We'll see what the rating number is, but I suspect that the NBA is about to declare huge success.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You mentioned a second ago Nikola Jokic. Well,
remember everyone when Brian said Nikola Jokic is good? Remember that? Well, then...
The windy jinx.
I will say, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I went and met the Heat on the road because Bam Adebayo was having a career season. And the Heat were like 2-0 in the in-season tournament. They were looking great to advance. Bam was playing awesome despite injuries to Jimmy Butler, a little bit Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero. Sat with Bam, had a great interview. Wrote the piece, was getting ready to run on ESPN.com. And Bam gets hurt. He's been out for like a week and a half with a hip injury. Although I think he's hopefully going to be coming back this upcoming week. And, you know, I went on that soliloquy about just how awesome Jokic has been. I made the case that Jokic might actually, following, you know, historically great season, that he might be having the greatest efficiency season in the history of the game.
Well, let me read some stats since then.
Oh my God.
I'm right here. So in four games, Denver's 1-3. Nikola Jokic is shooting 10 for 25 from the field, 40%. Shooting 25%.
No, that's in two games. 10 for 25 in two games.
No.
No.
No. This is
I'm reading the aggregate stats.
Wait a minute. He's only made 10 baskets in four games?
No, Ryan, no. Average.
The averages.
Oh, average. Okay, averages. Thank you. Sorry.
He's shooting 25% from three. This is maybe the most stunning one. Shooting 66% from the line. Not what you would expect.
That's not the most stunning stat.
No,
I have the most stunning stat in front of me. Go. I know you've got a McMahon. Go ahead.
No, go with that.
Well, just a couple. The last two games is when he really fell off the cliff. He played well in a loss at Sacramento. He had a Joker type. I mean, that's when he had that 36-13-14 game. Right. No Jamal Murray, they lose.
That's the guy that I was talking about.
Yeah, the last two games, Joker went 9 of 32 from the floor in a loss to the Clippers. And 9 of 26 from the floor in a home loss to the Rockets, which is the first road win for the Rockets all season long. Fellas, Joker, up until that point of the season, had only had one game when he didn't shoot at least 50% from the floor. And it gets uglier. And we always talk about, like, Joker has the best touch in the league. Maybe the best touch ever in terms of, like,
I mean,
the guy
the way he shoots shots up there and the ball bounces on the rim three times and goes in, like, it happens like all the time.
It's usually like he has a magnet in the ball that finds the middle of the rim. Joker, this is a Stats Williams special. Joker in the paint, the last two games where he's usually ridiculously efficient, 13 of 43. Okay. Those 30 missed shots in the paint over a two-game span are the most by any player since they have the play-by-play tracking. That's since 1996-97. 30 missed shots in the paint over two games, the most by any player since they have
in
the tracking.
25-plus years, basically.
And again, this is a guy who usually shoots a lob threat type of percentage, despite the fact that there are a bunch of floaters and hooks and those type of things. Outside the restricted area in the paint, 4 of 23. The guy, now, look, we say all this. I think we're going to trust the greater sample size of his career over two games of just absolutely hideous play or hideous shooting. But it is shocking how much he has struggled. You just don't see this. It is shocking how much he struggled in these last couple of games.
I don't know how to explain it.
I mean, I would explain it as it's two games during the season and he's still awesome. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I would explain it's got to be a fluke fact. It's got to be some fluke stuff.
That first bad game. I mean, I'm just saying it's not good for me.
I would also explain it as the Windy Jinx. And I would say that Joker was a hell of a lot better player when Wendy was campaigning against him being the most valuable player. When Wendy was a hater, Joker was dominating the league. Wendy
saying
starts
that he shouldn't be the MVP.
No,
I was
sir-y.
Saying that Embiid, because here's the thing, people who weren't listening to us back then will think that I was actually campaigning against him, including all the people in Denver. I wasn't saying he shouldn't be the MVP. In fact, I voted for him for MVP. It's on the record.
What I was saying
is Embiid shouldn't be disqualified because he sprained his ankle.
I didn't say you didn't vote for him. I said you campaigned against him.
It's one of many illogical arguments that we've had on the pod.
If you don't believe me, Google Brian Windhorst jackass.
And you listen will find to it. Where you hear, will hear what I was saying.
Oh, yes.
We'll definitely hear some things if you Google that.
You mentioned briefly the Clippers there because that was the first loss of the Nuggets in that little two game thing. By the way, Ivica Zubac, there's nobody that has good numbers against Jokic in the last few years, but of all the primary defenders, the only guy who's actually been able to kind of maybe slow him down a little bit has been Zubac. And he was a factor in that first game. And I should just say about the Clippers, don't look now, but they've won 7 out of 10. They've won 3 in a row. They've crawled above 500. And Kawhi had 41, his season high, on Friday night. And that's the thing, like, we can parse, and I've said this before and I'll continue to say, you can parse how you're going to play Westbrook, how you're going to play Harden. Basically, they're not sharing the floor at all, by the way. Like, Ty Lue has finally gotten to the point where, like, he's barely playing Westbrook. And when he does play,
literally the last game, they did not play together for 1 second.
Right.
And that's what that, like, they can't play together. And they've gotten to that point, and we'll see how Russ rolls with it, because he's the one who's,
right, and they started,
like you
winning.
Said, he's barely playing. Yep.
But one of the big reasons that they're playing better is that over this last 10 games, Kawhi has started to look like the Kawhi who was at the end of last year before he hurt his knee. So I will point that out. McMahon, you got to get back to Dallas, because the in-season tournament champion Lakers are coming to town for a visit to Dallas on Tuesday night. I wonder how LeBron and AD are going to be in that game on the second night of a back-to-back after they, by the way, I will point out, this game tonight started at 5:30 local here in Las Vegas. It ended about 8:30, and it took a little while for them to do the trophy presentation. All the players are done with their interviews and out of the arena within about 25 minutes after the end of the trophy presentation. I wonder if it had something to do with a Saturday night off in Las Vegas with plenty of time on their hands.
Well, plenty of time and 500K to burn for each player. So
yeah,
they might have some good times. But what stays in Vegas, or what happens in Vegas, will stay in Vegas. We won't go snooping.
But, you know, I will just say that they will be in Vegas tonight. Then they go home tomorrow. Then they play Monday. They play Monday at home. They play Monday and Tuesday. So I don't know what Lakers team is going to show up on Tuesday, but we did have some Mavericks news today, McMahon. So we look elsewhere in the NBA. There's a lot still going on. We've got to return to regular season here. What was the Mavs news today?
By the way, the Lakers don't play Monday. Their back to back is Tuesday, Wednesday, so that they'll have some recovery. They'll have some recovery time before they
see. Did you not tell me earlier that they had a Monday, Tuesday back to back?
I said the Mavericks do.
Oh, the Mavericks do.
We were talking about the Mavericks.
Sorry.
But Kyrie, who's been dealing with right foot soreness all year long, and he's played through it, but he's missed four games, you know, a couple at one time, then one here, one there. There was a pretty nasty scare last night or Friday night in Portland where Kyrie got fouled. He's on the ground, and Dwight Powell, his teammate, ends up falling right on that foot. And Kyrie was clearly in agony. He got up, hit his free throws, and then they took him back to the locker room, checked right out of the game. He was ruled out. MRI, that the Mavericks got good news considering that there was some concern that this could be a major injury. The MRI showed no structural damage. He has a right heel contusion, did not make the trip to Memphis. They say no timetable on his return. I think they're being pretty cautious with that. But again, there's a sense of relief for the Mavericks that it's not a major injury. But Kyrie's going to miss at least one game, and then, you know, could be a little bit of time. I mean, it's not unusual to see guys miss a week or two with a heel contusion. And again, especially given that he's been dealing with soreness in that foot. So, you know, we'll see if Kyrie's is on the floor when the Lakers get to Dallas on Tuesday. I would not hold your breath for that. And honestly, the Mavericks are pretty banged up now. Josh Green's got an elbow. Maxi Kleber's been out for a while with a dislocated toe. Grant Williams has missed the last couple games with right knee soreness. So
Luka
they're pretty banged
up. Luka has a newborn.
Up. Well, I'll tell you what, though, boy. Luka has been lighting it on fire since he became a daddy. I mean, not that he wasn't pretty good at basketball before, but
right.
I mean, this dude, you know, he had 35, 15, and 18 in that wild comeback game against the Thunder that they weren't able to finish out with a win. But still, I mean, the guy was absolutely dominant. Then he had a 25-point triple-double against the Jazz by halftime. Ended up with a 40-point triple-double and sat out the whole fourth quarter. That was the game that was memorable, one, for Luka's ridiculous stat line. Two, for Luka and Chris Dunn getting into it. And Dunn was talking all kinds of stuff, and Luka was, I don't know, honestly, just kind of holding his ground by Luka standards. I didn't think he was too obnoxious here, but they both got teed up. And Luka asked the refs, and this was caught. He didn't ask the ref. He said something like, "I didn't do anything. I'm just busting his ass," and he got mad, which was, I mean, it was a factual statement.
Hey, listen, if you're Luka, you gotta fight every technical you get. One of those technicals could be important, could cost you a lot of money. Come the spring,
they all add up.
Yeah, and then the other thing that was most memorable about that game was our pal and former guest Will Hardy's post-game analysis of his team's performance in a 50-point loss was when he called it a masterpiece of dog. I'm not going to make Jackson's up late. I'm not going to make him edit. A masterpiece of dog droppings, but he used a much more creative word.
Yeah, that was spectacular. And also the way he delivered it too. You should find the video if you haven't seen it. It's worth seeing his face as it does, you know, as good, as funny as the written quote is, it doesn't do it justice the way he delivers it. The Mavericks also, I think, have a visit coming up this week from the Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, the Timberwolves didn't advance in the in-season tournament, mm-hmm. so they've been a little bit out of mind. But I don't know if anybody has noticed, but they are now 17-4.
Yeah.
And
best record in the league.
10-1 at home. They've won 6 in a row. I guess you have to classify the Lakers as the hottest team in the league, having just won the in-season tournament in 3, you know, I guess elimination games this week. But other than that, the Wolves are the hottest team in the league. Their defense continues to be extremely impressive. Anthony Edwards got hit in the face and missed some time, and he came back. He wasn't really himself in his first game back, but they were themselves defensively. So, you know, the Dallas has the third best record in the West right mm-hmm. now, number 3 versus number 1. Like, that's a real game coming up this week. Sounds like Kyrie might be a little questionable for that, but still, yeah. McMahon, like, that's an interesting little post in-season tournament game coming up.
No, listen, it'll be an interesting week in Dallas. And like I said, they've got to play the Grizzlies, who have been playing better, but obviously you're near the bottom of the West. And then these two games, so they've got Monday in Memphis, Lakers at home Tuesday, Wolves at home on Thursday. And look, man, the Wolves have been just stacking up wins with a key starter out. Jaden McDaniels hadn't played since November 20th. The Wolves sent out an update on him last week that basically said he's progressing. He's been cleared to participate in on-court player development and strength training activities. So doing some basketball stuff, but not practicing. It sounds like he won't be ready to go by then. But man, we've talked about the Wolves. Like, they are a dominant defensive team. Gobert is playing, again, at a defense player of the year level. Anthony Edwards is a two-way stud. Karl Anthony Towns has really been playing well and has, you know, adapted to being the number two guy and is thriving in that role. Naz Reid, if you want to talk about early six-man of the year candidates, has to be in that conversation. Conley just kind of keeps everything on track and knocks down open shots. You know, it's going to be like – I'm not going to anoint the Wolves until we see it come playoff time, because it is a group that hasn't won in the playoffs. But hey, they're first place in the Western Conference and have a lot of the things that you look for a team that's going to have a chance to do damage in the playoffs. And that's specifically a bona fide superstar elite defense.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've done everything they can through the first quarter of the season to show themselves to be a championship contending team, or at least a team that should be considered in that caliber. They got to do it for another 60 games. They got to be in the top 3 in the West. They got to get themselves home court in the playoffs and, like, do something with it then. But look, all you could do is look at what you've got in front of you so far. And as you said, what we've seen so far is that they are a legitimate threat. And, you know, they came out of that series last year against Denver talking about the fact that they, you know, gave them as good of a challenge as anybody, and they felt confident they could carry that forward. The way they've played so far, I mean, they certainly look like they're a team to be reckoned with in the West. If you look at this Laker team we talked about before, right? It's a different animal for the Lakers trying to physically go up against a team like Minnesota with the size issue sort of goes away then, right? Mm-hmm. And with Karl Towns and Anthony Edwards, the Wolves are a higher upside offensive team, arguably, than the Lakers.
Yeah, the Wolves still can get stuck in the mud offensively.
For sure.
There still are spacing challenges playing two bigs, even with Cat being, you know, Spix Bamote, the self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man of all time. but what? There are still spacing challenges.
I hadn't heard that acronym, pronounced out loud like that.
I've said it a thousand times.
You said it a thousand times.
I know, but I hadn't heard it pronounced like that. I'm sorry.
Yes, you have.
You said it that way on the pod many times. Many, many times.
But, yeah, the Wolves.
I don't think it's been many, many.
Many, many.
Okay. I would say many.
I would say I've pronounced it that way more often than Cat has played well in a playoff game.
I would also agree with that. And look, they're going to have to prove it. That, like you said, no one's going to really buy into them until they prove it in the playoffs, but they're looking like a team to be reckoned with, and they've realized the promise that people thought they could have coming into the season with the way they played through the first quarter of.
You know what? They are certainly too good for them to make a trade before the deadline that is motivated by long-term financial issues. So let's just put it that way. Yep. If they did something like that, there I can only imagine the kind of backlash that there would be. They're good enough to say, hey, you know, you've got to give this group a chance to show how good they are come playoff time.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. All right. Well, we look forward to that game for sure. And I'm your fine coverage of it should be spectacular. Keep an eye on those Timberwolves. You mentioned a minute ago that the Mavericks are playing in Memphis on Monday. The Grizzlies have now played 21 games. They've lost 15 of them, but they've played 21 games. They have four this upcoming week, and Ja Morant will be technically have served his 25 game suspension by the start of next week. And next Tuesday, I think is the first game he's, possibly able to play. And Bontemps, you attended Adam Silver's press conference Saturday night here in Las Vegas, where he discussed the Ja Morant, updated the Ja Morant situation. Wonder if you could update us in case people missed it.
Yeah, Adam Silver got asked about the Ja Morant situation and where things stood. And as we've talked about on the pod a bunch of times, he had said in his statement announcing the suspension back in June that there was going to be road marks or check marks along the way that he would have to clear in order to get back on the court at the end of that 25 game suspension. And Adam Silver said that he's going to be checking in directly with Ja Morant this week ahead of his potential return. And that to the best of my knowledge, he's complied with everything he's been asked to do. As I said, we'll talk at least once this week before he comes back, and we'll review the program and make sure the conditions are in place for him to be successful going forward. But I would say the key phrase there is, quote, to the best of my knowledge, he's complied with everything he's been asked to do. And that would certainly indicate to me that next Tuesday in New Orleans, our guy McMahon will be on the scene for Ja's potential first game back on the court after serving this suspension in the first game he's eligible to play.
Yeah, and look, unless something pops up, like he's coming back in New Orleans, you know, what exactly were the conditions that he had to comply with? Silver has been intentionally extremely vague with that. But the Grizzlies, obviously, it's been like their issues and their struggles have gone far, far, far beyond the face of the franchise being suspended again, right? The Steven Adams thing was it's been a disaster. You know, we've talked about this. To have him ruled out for the season before it even started was a huge blow. Brandon Clark's probably not playing this season coming off the Achilles. You go down the rotation, aside from Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr., like they've just been devastated by injuries. They still got a bunch of guys out. But those guys, they've won three out of their last five. It was three out of four before they got smoked pretty good by Minnesota the other night. And, you know, there's a feeling there of, hey, it's been painful. It hasn't been fun. It's been a tough go, but they feel like, hey, only five games out of the final play-in spot. Like they think that they can get Ja back and they're hoping that they can make a little run at this thing. And, you know, so I'm just saying, we'll see.
It's never a good, only five games out of 10th.
Yeah. A quarter of the way into the season. But you know what though? The kind of one of the points of the play-in is that if you have some kind of, you know, major injury early in the season to a star or a star is absent for other reasons, that you're not necessarily buried if you get off to an awful start. And they're not necessarily buried. They've just got the odds stacked pretty significantly against them.
Well, by the way, the team that sits in 11th right now in the West, only a game and a half out of 10th, the Golden State Warriors, mm-hmm. who have not been very good, who now, if Chris Paul has been banged up, their starting lineup has not been good at all. There's obviously the ongoing drama surrounding Klay Thompson and his contract expiring this season. They're throwing the ball all over the place, as they often have at their peak. The problem is they're not as good as they were at their peak, so they are not able to overcome the turnovers to quite the same degree as they used to before.
They had 28 turnovers against the Thunder on Friday night. Now, the game did go to overtime, in fairness. They had 28 turnovers, the Warriors did. Sorry. Yep.
No, it's just that game was indicative of the way they have played, and everyone's just sort of been waiting for them to flip a switch, and they came into the season talking a lot about the fact that they wanted to get off to a good start. They didn't want to be digging out of a hole all year. They wanted to, you know, have the kind of start they had 2 years ago when they went on to win the title. And instead, they're right back in the same spot they've been in, sort of fighting to be in the play-in mix. And, you know, you look in the West, I was just looking at it now, there's a 3.5 game gap from the Warriors in 11th to the Mavericks in third. And there's a 2-game gap between the Mavericks in third and the Pelicans in 10th. So as sort of we expected, you know, and obviously, you know, we might have thought it was Denver out front instead of Minnesota, but the way this has shook out, there's a giant glut of teams from basically 2 to 10 in the West, or 2 to 11 in the West, and that doesn't even count Memphis. Mm-hmm. They're all within a couple games, and this thing is going to be seesawing back and forth probably for the next 4 months till the end of the regular season.
Well, and Bradley Beal is soon to be back on the floor for the Suns, so, you know, knock on wood, if you're in Phoenix, we're going to see that star trio together finally for the first time. There's not a specific date on that, but they say Beal is close. Now, Durant's been banged up lately, too. But hopefully we'll see them, here in the next week or so. They've kept their heads above water with Booker missing a bunch of time, Beal barely playing, KD missing a little bit of time. They're 12-10. And, you know, certainly they're a threat.
I just want to go back to those turnovers real quick. Six different players had at least three, and three different players had at least four. That is a masterpiece of you know what.
Yeah. Chris Paul was out sick in that game and probably used him to handle the ball a little bit.
Well, Pajemski, who's their rookie, who's been playing some of that, only had one turnover. So he's not on that. He's not on my list here, but I just couldn't believe when I saw 28 turnovers. I mean,
it's impressive.
All right. Well, we get no games on the NBA on Sunday. That's why we're going to doing this on Saturday night. And then we're back into the regular season and back from Vegas. So we'll be interested to see how life feels like after the in-season tournament's over. And obviously AD is not going to play like this every game, and I'm sure it'll be used against him. So that's what happened. But thank you to Jackson for staying up late out on the East Coast. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon for a terrific few days here in Las Vegas. They were terrific. They browbeat me into doing the live pod and it came off. And now they're immediately starting to talk me into doing another one.
So we don't have to hold on. Time out. You have the time of your life, Wendy.
Wouldn't say that.
We don't have to talk you into anything, buddy. You have the time of your life. We'll be doing some more of those for sure.
All right. Thanks, guys, for making this a great week here in Vegas. And we're headed home. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will talk to you guys in a few days.
Wendy, that was really sweet of you. I feel closer than ever to you guys. Adios, amigos. Con todo mi corazón.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.